You're tuned into Zero Signal, a show about what they won't say and what you're probably already thinking. No fluff, no filters, no bullshit. Let's crack it open.
At this time, I'm going to ask you to fasten your seatbelt.
I was reading this old news article the other day about this weird wave of drone sightings over New Jersey. Dozens of people reported seeing these lights moving across the sky in perfect formation, totally silent. No one really knew what the hell was going on. And the FAA didn't say much. Law enforcement just called it commercial drones and kind of brushed it off. But honestly, the videos looked way too coordinated, too polished, or too rehearsed. It didn't feel like a prank. It felt like a test. And I know, some of this stuff has already been debunked. I get that. I'm not trying to spin up these conspiracy theories here, but something about it stuck with me. And it brought up this old ideal I hadn't thought about in years. It was called Project Bluebeam. Have you heard of it? The theory from the 90s about holograms in the sky, fake miracles, and a global deception meant to reshape religion and reality itself. Back then, it sounded totally out there. But now, with everything we're seeing in the tech space, drone light shows, AI-generated content, voice cloning, it's like, how far are we from something that could actually fool the world? Just today, I was watching this video of Trump supposedly shutting down Tesla production in the US because Elon Musk pissed him off. I knew this video wasn't real, it wasn't true, but still, it was so convincing. It looked just like Trump, it sounded like him, and it would look like any other video that you would see in the Oval Office. So that really made me think, if seeing is believing, what happens when you can't trust what you see? That's what we're talking about today. Might not be war or collapse. It might be the deception, a kind that feels so real, so divine, that people fall to their knees without ever questioning it. The enemy doesn't really need to bomb churches. He just needs to rewrite reality until we're worshiping an illusion. So yeah, I might be watching the sky, but I'm also watching the feed. But let me throw it at you. When you see all this tech that we've got now, AI deepfakes, drone swarms, even voice cloning, do you think we're actually primed for something like Project Bluebeam to take place?
Yeah, man, I think it's definitely interesting. The roots of it are kind of unique. I spent a little bit of time digging into Serge Monast and some of his influences and his untimely, suspicious death. So Serge Monast was born in Quebec in 1945. He was a journalist, poet, essayist, and he contributed to a lot of mainstream publications. In early life, he shifted his focus into conspiracy theories. He was inspired by an interesting character named William Guy Carr, who, after looking through some of his stuff, he was a big anti-Semite. Mr. Carr was in the Navy. After his Navy career, he got big into the conspiracy movement, and a lot of the conspiracies that evolved today originated from him. Guys like Hitler and everyone else piggybacked off some of his anti-Semitic tendencies, and he blamed a lot of the New World Order stuff on the Jews. Back to Serge, he published a book called Project Bluebeam, and this is where I get a little bit suspicious, because he claimed to get a document from someone in NASA stating the steps to Project Bluebeam, but he never produced it. I always find these conspiracy theories hard to believe when somebody doesn't actually present the evidence. Part of me thinks maybe the CIA gave it to him to stoke fear.
You said he died from a heart attack, right? Under unusual circumstances, he was relatively a healthy man at that point in time. Why do you think that is, though? Do you know how old he was when that happened?
He was 51. Interesting story about him. He claims after he published his book in 1994 that he was being harassed, followed, and people were trying to either put him in jail or put him in the ground. Fast forward a year or so, he decided that he didn't want his kids in public schools. So all this background story, I did so much digging, and it's so hard to find any sort of credible references. And I understand being in Canada 30 years ago, it's going to be hard to find any sort of legal records. But he was arrested for not putting his kids in public school. Police came, took his kids, and then he eventually got arrested. I think he spent a night or two in jail, and a night or two after he got released, he died of a heart attack. So, a little bit sus there, but as you and I can imagine, if you're going through something as traumatic as having your kids taken from you, and you're not healthy to begin with, you're in your 50s, how's the diet, how's the lifestyle? Obviously, he was super paranoid, and he had a heart attack. So was it self-triggered? There's some conspiracies saying that the government used a heart attack gun on him, or was he poisoned when he was in jail? That flip from getting out of the slammer and to, you know, being on your deathbed was anywhere between 24 and 48 hours.
It's really interesting. I had a lengthy law enforcement career and I've experienced some myself. Anxiety can really ramp up your heart rates. You know, it can kind of get your blood pressure out of whack. And that can lead to some bad stuff, right? Especially as we age. Like I'm in my 40s, but as I get into my 50s and 60s, if I were to carry on, heart issues is probably not outside of, especially if you're not taking care of yourself. A lot of bad experiences during that time. The government of Canada, for whatever reason at that point in time, didn't think they were properly educating his kids. I couldn't imagine losing my son or daughter if they're getting pulled away, because not only are they locking them up, they're probably trying to pit their kids in some version of CPS. Do you think there's any credible evidence out there, at least during that time, right? Because I think when we talk about conspiracy theories, there's always a grain of truth and there's some false realities and some real realities, like that our government doesn't want us to know. Like if you tuned in a little bit earlier today, the government was talking about UFOs and trying to release some new information. So there's always like a grain of truth to some of his theories. And I think they're actually stronger today than they have been historically, just because of the advancement of technology that we're seeing out there now. Do you think there was a reason why the CIA or whatever the Canadians' version of that would want to silence him at that time?
Yeah, because he claimed the conspiracy, the roots of it and him were between NASA and UN. You know, kind of two bigger organizations. With my little knowledge, it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of communication between NASA being a United States agency and the UN being something completely separate. Why would the CIA want to silence him or deceive him? I think some of this roots back into his religious point of view, which we share the same belief. We believe in Jesus. We love Jesus. You know, the book of Revelation, there is the Antichrist coming, one world government, one world monetary system. You'd have to deceive so many people for them to give up their religious views, freedom, ability to work without a mark. Circle back to his kids. I tried to dig around because I was curious to see if any of his kids ever spoke out after his death. I think his daughter was 7. They claim he had a son, but there's no records of them. If they got taken into state custody, I'm sure they got fostered out to another family and those records are sealed forever. But it's interesting no one's ever came forward 30 years after his death to at least say something, make that claim. Being 7, 5, 6, 7, maybe you don't even remember. There's stuff from when we were kids we're not going to remember. But no one's ever come forward and said, that was my dad. There's no record of his wife. I spent so much time researching this guy. No marriage records that I could find. There's no name given to her. But you would think if her husband was murdered and her kids were taken away, there would be some sort of legal documentation with her getting the kids back. But none of that exists. So that's kind of interesting in itself. It's almost like that whole outside of him and his, you know, the few interviews he did, which were all in French. I do have some transcripts, which we can talk about that are super interesting later. But there's no mention of them. There's no name. They don't have names. It's like they didn't exist. It's like if they were real, which I'm sure they were, they've been scrubbed from the record, which is kind of scary and I think gives a little credence to this story and the possible murder of him.
I think that's really interesting too, right? He had to have some type of mother to his children, right? Like as reading through the stories, I just assumed he was divorced and the sole caretaker of his kids during that point because they made a big deal about it. If he was doing something wrong, why didn't they give it to the wife or the mother or whoever was supporting those children at that time? So that's an interesting point I never actually thought about. All the focus has always been on Serge and what he did during that time. It really makes me think. So I worked for Amazon Web Services in about 2010-ish, right? So sometime during that decade. It's been about 6 years there, but I met a lot of interesting people during that time. One of the guys I met was named Hal Hendershot. Hal spent a 30-year career in the federal government during, he was kind of one of the grandfathers of bringing internet around, right? Like he was working on and building the internet before it was ever actually a thing, right? But even before AOL was like actually a thing, when people start to like mess around in chat rooms. And he was developing. And that concept of Hal and his team and the rest of his organization is our modern day internet today, which was a really interesting guy that I worked with, right? He worked across the FBI and all these different spaces, and they were developing it for internal purposes. But it also makes me wonder, like a guy that's almost like a grandfather figure of NASA, he probably knew about a lot of technology prior to the regular person did. He probably knew the things that were coming, right? Like the drones now. Have you seen the pictures of the drone shows in China where they don't really do fireworks anymore? They have these drones flying around and they draw pictures in the sky. There's thousands of drones that are coordinated and it looks really impressive. Now, it's not going to convince anybody that's the second coming of Jesus with these drones, right? But we're in the early stages of it. And it seems like almost every year, whether it's in a combat or just in our society, drones are really leaned in into. And then it's like, how much further can that go, right? Like maybe he knew about some of the early aspects of the technology that wasn't released to the public yet. And I wonder, even if, let's say, like the government did kill him, right? I wonder if they're almost trying to shut him up. We're not talking about this technology because we don't want China or Russia to get it. As it's like when they were developing the nukes back in the day in the United States, we do have a lot of Nazi figures, whether it goes to NASA or wherever, right? Like helping to develop these things and like these competing empires. So I almost wonder, was he going to kind of have like loose lips, sink ships, right? Like, was he going to start to talk about this modern day technology that we know today that's probably 10 years behind, whether the tech sector is working on it or the government? And I wonder if that was the biggest risk at that time, if they were involved in it.
Yeah, it's also interesting because, you know, like Starlink, Elon Musk is shooting up how many thousands of satellites a year. And I think the goal is to have satellites all around the world, thousands like there are now from every government or every mega corporation. So, I mean, it's plausible. Some of this stuff is actually in popular culture now, too. You ever hear of the show called The Three-Body Problem?
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it, but I have heard of it.
Essentially, what it is about an alien civilization trying to come to Earth, right? So what they do is they have this technology. I forget if it's like a proton, electron, this particle. And they can encompass the whole Earth in this particle, and they can project anything they want in the skies. So they can have like countdowns. They can, you know, have asteroids flying through the surface, and nothing's really there. It's just a way to kind of screw with the people and scare the hell out of them. A lot of these theories are starting to kind of slip into modern culture, even through our media, even through our entertainment. The satellite thing is interesting because the thing about technology back in 94, the internet's still new. You know, holographic technology was probably a freaking joke. But now you're kind of starting to see, like you said, and there was an interesting thing back in 2015 where, and I don't know if they debunked it as a hoax or some sort of mirage, but there was a floating city in China that they captured on video. If you have time to look for it later, it's super interesting. It's almost like in the distance, you could see a city floating in the sky.
Yeah, I actually saw a news article on that. Like, it actually looks like a city in the sky. What we do know is that people in China and different places, even today, manipulate the weather, like through cloud seeding and making it rain in environments. So they're already starting to get that control of the sky. And as you start to shape it, it's about influence. One of the things I always think about is most people in this world say, you know, I'll believe it when I see it. But we're getting into the modern day and age now where just because you see it doesn't exactly mean you should believe it. I think about the second coming of Christ. Obviously, I'm a Christian, so it's something we think about as we read through Revelations. One of the things they say in the Bible is that everybody in the world's going to see it. Like, it's going to see it transpire. And generally, how I think about that is you're going to see it on your phone. You may not be live in person, but you're going to have some type of feed on your phone or on your TV where you're seeing this event. It's going to be breaking news. You're going to see it on news sources that are not actually suppressing it today, but you're going to see it. And I think it starts to tie back into some of that technology I was talking about, right? Like, I watched a video today where it looked like Trump. It sounded like Trump. It looked like the Oval Office, where he was just really mad at Elon Musk. So he's preventing, no Tesla's ever going to be built in the United States again. He's banning it. It'd be very easy to believe. And we're talking about that modern day influence now. So now we're seeing something that looks identical to what we would perceive in real life if we were standing there. But now everything's starting to influence us. Like, if you go onto Facebook or Twitter or TikTok, you have algorithms. Like, you look up the three body problem, like that movie we're talking about. You look it up, and now all of a sudden your phone's filled with images of that movie, people doing skits. Or if they want you to be a liberal instead of a conservative, maybe they'll start showing you those videos. How can they influence you and change you during that time? But now you're starting to see stuff that's fake. You're starting to hear stuff. Like, I could clone your voice and I can make you say whatever I wanted you to say. It starts to get really scary because that's always been the old adage of our time. If you see it, you will believe it. But now you can't really believe what you see. And it's going to start to be in the sky. Like, have you seen these concerts where I saw one concert with Travis Scott and he was dancing with Michael Jackson? Obviously, Michael Jackson has been dead for a long time, but they're able to do a hologram on the stage. And it looked like he was just standing there. But I wonder how you start to distort this. The one world order, that scares the hell out of me, man, because what do you believe then? You have your religious principles, but you can't always believe what your eyes are telling you. Can't believe what you hear all the time. What do you believe?
Yeah, man, it's definitely scary. And to piggyback off your point, technology's gotten to the point where you really don't have to project anything to the sky. Like you said, everyone has cell phones. The algorithm slightly nudges you. It's essentially trying to rewire your brain slowly over time with little nudges. It wants to control what you're thinking. wants to control what you're seeing. You almost don't need a projection in the sky. You can just do it, like you said, all through your phone, all through the TVs, all through the media you consume. It's scary, but it would be pretty dramatic if everyone saw something in the sky all at once. That would be pretty mind-blowing. But at the same time, I think for most of us, especially in today's society where a lot of people are starting to wake up to some of this technology, a lot of people might question it. Unless you live in Central Africa or the tribes of the Amazon, or if you're not living in civilized society where you have all this technology, I think a lot of people are going to question it, like we've questioned a lot of things in the past 5, 6, 7 years.
It's a good point, right? And I think a lot of people do. I just think trying to find that line in the sand of what you can actually believe out of this modern day world. A very simple example. Have you ever used those Jawbone microphones where you listen to audio? It actually doesn't go on your ear. I used to use them when I was a cop because you wanted to be able to hear all your surroundings, and it would vibrate up your jaw, and then you would hear it in your inner ear canal. That's how you would listen to music, but you could still hear your surroundings. Now, there's way more technical opportunities to do that with modern day technology now. But now you don't know if you can believe what you see. Like if you hear something where you start to hear God talking to you, like, can I influence what you hear? Can I project it into your ear? Maybe.
So do you want to talk about the four steps of Project Bluebeam? Yeah. Or do we want to break it down into what he claims the four steps are?
Yeah, let's break it down. Why don't you go ahead and kick it off?
Yeah, so different references have different wording, but essentially breaks down. Step one is a breakdown of all archaeological and religious understanding. So apparently in this phase, supposedly there's going to be a staged earthquake that would reveal fake archaeological discoveries undermining the world's major religions. That one's a pretty big one too. That almost seems just as big an undertaking as projecting something in the sky. But apparently, like I said, earthquake's going to open the ground and they're going to find something that is going to rewrite the way we understand history, religion, where we came from. That's pretty wild.
You know, I've been reading, and I don't know a ton about this. Maybe you do. They have the technology to fake earthquakes now, to cause earthquakes through technological means, even today. So that can actually be staged in our modern world. We can actually cause these things to happen. And that's just almost like planting something at that point, right?
Scientists claim they found secret chambers underneath the pyramids that go hundreds of meters deep. And they claim, and I don't believe this, that the body of Jesus Christ is underneath that pyramid. This gives a little bit of a check mark in old Serge's column about fake archaeological discoveries. But I thought that was wild when I heard it. To piggyback off of your thought about the earthquakes, Nikola Tesla, there is stories, like firsthand accounts, and whether or not they're verified or not, we're going back into the 1800s here, but people said that he could go up to a building, he stuck something on it, and it would vibrate the building, and the building would start swaying back and forth. And he said he claimed he was able to do all this just through frequencies. And there is a lot of frequency tech out there. In theory, if you had a big enough projector or big enough satellite, you could shoot these frequencies into a fault line and probably get it to go off if it's strong enough.
What's really interesting about that, I was reading this the other day. Do you know who kind of like quality checked all of Nikola Tesla's work?
Oh, no, tell me, man.
It was the uncle of Donald Trump.
Dude, I heard, sometimes it's hard to separate the bullshit from the truth.
But did I?
They claimed that when Nikola Tesla died, he was broke, poor, destitute, that Donald Trump's uncle was the guy that went in there and took all of his documentation, which is wild.
Crazy. I read that article the other day and I was like, wow, that is super interesting. And there's actually a newspaper clipping where he was reading through all of it and like studying the material and like kind of bringing it to the US right at that time, which I just thought was wild.
Dude, this is completely off subject, but there's a book called The Last President. And in the book, the last president's name is Trump. And there's another book called The Wonderful Adventures of Baron Trump. It's about a time traveler. And a lot of the stuff, if you stretch a little bit, you can make the argument is that they're time travelers and they're able to travel through time because of Tesla's inventions. These books were written about them, kind of giving hints to the future that we're living in now. They haven't gone on a huge deep dive. I've heard ramblings of it, but I just thought it was super, super interesting. And it's very speculative whether or not that stuff's forged, or Trump's a great marketer, great entertainer. So who knows, you know? Stage two. So stage one is an earthquake that reveals fake archaeological discoveries undermining world religions, timelines, histories. Stage two, massive space show via holograms. So we kind of touched on that, but essentially what it's saying is, say you live in the Middle East, right? The projection is going to be Muhammad or Allah. If you live in a Christianized nation like Western Europe, North America, South America, you're going to see Jesus. If you live in like China, you're going to see Buddha, so on and so forth, right? You get the you get the gist. But as this projection's going across the world, these beings are going to merge into the Antichrist. So he's going to look completely different. He's going to have a message of world harmony, peace, unity. So that's stage two of this. Stage three is telepath. Sorry, you go ahead, man.
No, it's all good. I'm obviously a tech geek at heart and working for Amazon and bringing tech to my new company. We deep dived a lot of this technology stuff. But one of the things that really freaks me out right now is we talk about the implants, right? As you're talking about Nikola Tesla, the founder of Tesla Motor Vehicles, which is Elon Musk, who is doing the Neuralink. Obviously, some great purposes, like making people that are crippled able to use their hands or use a computer. But a lot of that's coming from a vanity perspective. Now, one of the things I always like think about is if more people get this becomes more like mainstream, that's another way to manipulate somebody. If you can make them walk, if you can make them see, if you can make them use a computer when they could never do that before, how much more could you just manipulate them? Like make them see stuff that is not actually there. We're seeing a lot of people, and we'll go into this in a future episode, but a lot of people are doing it for vanity purposes. I remember listening to the Joe Rogan podcast where a guy for an AI company that was there really believed in these implants. And he said he was waiting to have children because he didn't want to have that knowledge gap. He wanted to implant his child from birth with some type of Neuralink capability. They always talk about those impressionable years in children. They learn the most through 1 through 7. That's when they're the most impressionable. And he wants to capture that period so that his future kid grows up with this technology and plant it into him, knows how to use it perfectly. So I wonder if that starts to catch on mainstream. I think that's another way to manipulate people. I worry about my computer being hacked, but could you imagine having your Neuralink hacked?
When we were growing up talking about like reading the Revelation, talking to mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, or whatever, like you get to the point where everyone's going to have to get the mark of the beast either on their right hand or their forehead. I'm thinking to myself, who in a million years would ever do that knowing that this is in the Bible? So I just assumed by the time that came around, that all the Christians would be dead, or they'll just be so scared that they've lost belief or whatever. But like, the more I think about it, the devil always gives you something with a promise. You know, I think about this Neuralink. I think about these implants. What if someone came up to you and on the outside, it's all above board. Like, you know, you're protected. What if someone came up to you and said, hey, if I give you an implant, you're never going to get sick again. You're not going to age. You're going to live 400, 500, 600 years. You're going to know everything in the world. A lot of people saying, yeah, man, justifying it to themselves. This is the future of human evolution. This is the future of technology. Then once everyone gets it, or the majority of people gets it, then it's used to track you. Then it's used as a kill switch if you don't believe. You can't buy. Then you can't sell. You can't trade. You can't work. Right? So society and the devil always gives you something with this nice, glossy, beautiful expectation of greatness and beauty. It always turns out as a way to control you and suppress you and make you a slave.
Yeah. So say if you were blind, would you get that implant if the implant made you see again?
Man, dude, that's really tempting. You know, like I struggle with that because you want, like as humans, you want to justify it. I struggle with this because I think in the book of Revelation, you have to willingly take it knowing what it's for. Like you're taking this mark to worship the beast.
Yes.
Right? So
correct.
It would be super tempting. Like, well, I don't want to get an implant so I can open my door. I don't want to get an implant so I can walk through my house and the lights come on and my AI can talk to me. I don't want that. But if it's like, hey, you lost your vision, how about we put this in your head? You can see. I might be like, all right.
One of the reasons why I bring it up is I think about COVID, where COVID was used to exact control on the population by locking them down, by scaring people to get vaccines during that time. And a lot of it was fear mongering, right? Like if you don't get this vaccine, you are going to die. And now we know the reality now is COVID's been around for several years and we know it's very much like the flu, but there is a lot of fear mongering. I think, right? Like as we talk about the devil and like starting to influence that mark is, if you're not going to do this, whether it's restore your sight or whether you get sick, like if you're not going to have this implant, you're not going to survive. And that's kind of like where my mind goes with it, right? And then it obviously goes down that bad track of Project Bluebeam and Serge Massant, right? But I almost wonder, like from a convincing standpoint, it's kind of like COVID, right? Like take this vaccine or something really bad's going to happen.
Right. Let's get to the next 2 points because I'd like to break down Serge Monas's interview because it gets a lot more crazy. These high level bullet points are kind of just like step 1 through 4. Then when he does this interview And I can give you the link if you want to post. It's just a transcript of the interview. It's in French, so I didn't watch it. But step three of this is telepathic mind control via ELF, VLF, and LF waves. He's claiming that voices, I guess God or this Antichrist, is going to talk to you through low frequency waves, like voices where they project something at your head. Back in 94, it seemed far-fetched because there weren't a ton of satellites floating around. There's 8 billion people on Earth. Like, how are you going to target everyone to speak into their head?
We are kind of talking about that, though, when I was talking about the jawbone microphone of its voice conductive, right? So you're hearing in your head. So far, we're 3 for 3.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I know there's been documented CIA documents where the CIA has harassed people by projecting voices into their head. So it's a technology that exists. It's just upgrading it to that mass scale could happen any year. But dude, do you ever hear about Lucille Ball breaking up underground Japanese resistance during World War II?
What?
No. This is a fun story. So this had to do with a dental implant, right? You know, so she was on Johnny Carson talking about it, one of those late night shows back in the 70s or 80s. She went in to get a dental filling. What material they used escapes me. But essentially, she got her tooth filled. She was driving and she could hear music in her head. And she's like, what the hell is that? And she turned the radio on, and the song on the radio was playing. She turned it off. She realized that whatever reason, this filling was conducting radio waves, like the voice of skull technology we were talking about. She could hear radio waves around her, wherever she was. I think one night, I might be chopping the story up a little bit, but you'll get the idea. But so one night, again, driving, and she's hearing something in Japanese. And she's like, what the hell? Like, what is this? So anyway, another night she drives and hears it again. Anyway, turns around, gives it to the U.S. government. They catch these guys by triangulating the radio frequency. There's a bunch of Japanese insurgents in the U.S. and they broke them up.
Wait, so she wasn't picking up like AM, FM. She was like picking up like radio?
She was picking up radio waves and she was catching these guys. She was hearing these guys speaking Japanese back and forth, and eventually told somebody, because it was during the height of World War II. And I know a lot of Japanese got put into internment camps. But she gave it to the U.S. government, and they were able to triangulate where these guys were. And in fact, they were trying to do something nefarious.
So my one question is, and you may not know the answer to this because it's an interesting story, but how did she understand the Japanese in order to turn it over?
I think she just heard Japanese, and she thought, given the height of the conflict in the world at the time, she realized she was hearing radio frequencies, so she decided it would be best to tell the U.S. government what she was hearing. She couldn't understand what they were saying. Just when they went to investigate it, the U.S. government was able to find the signal and listen in on it and break them up.
It's really interesting. I remember I Love Lucy, but I'm assuming that's the right person, right? From I Love Lucy?
Yeah.
Yep. I didn't realize color TV existed for many years because I remember being little watching I Love Lucy.
Leave It to Beaver. Yeah, I love those shows.
Andy Griffin. We watched Andy Griffin as well. And they were all black and white from what I remember.
Yeah, it was those three shows and like Saturday morning cartoons. We used to love those.
Yeah. I remember staying up late in my room and watching those shows. It must have been like 10 o'clock. At least it felt like 10 o'clock at night to me. My parents were in bed, and I don't know why I was interested in this, but that's what I used to watch. I didn't know she was an American hero.
They were definitely good, wholesome shows, a little bit different than today's media. But anyway, on to stage four. So stage four, we can kind of break this down a little bit more. But stage four, supernatural events and stage alien invasion. Global chaos, panic, and an engineered savior to kind of enforce this totalitarian world government. So I'm just going to recap the four stages quick so we can keep everybody following along. It's an earthquake that shows fake archaeological evidence, like rewrites our history. Massive show via holograms. Whatever god that region worships gets projected into the sky. They all merge into the Antichrist. Then we're going to have telepathic mind control via these frequencies. Some sort of crazy supernatural event where the savior comes and keeps us out of the total destruction of the world.
And that's the engineered savior at that point in time. Have you seen that guy that's come out that said he's like the second coming of Jesus Christ?
And clearly he is a false prophet. Very much so. But here, check out this clip. I am Abdullah, the successor of Imam al-Mahdi alayhi salam, the successor of the Comforter Ahmed, the successor of Simon Peter, the successor of Muhammad, the successor of Jesus Christ. I am the true and legitimate Pope. I am the proof upon the Christians. I am the son of the Muslims through my father, and the son of the Christians and the Jews through my mother.
I am the son of the East through my father and the son of the West through my mother. I am like Zulkarnain, who with one horn in the East and one in the West. And I am the inheritor of all that lies between. I am more knowledgeable than any false pope, and I am appointed by name and the will of the prophets. My name is also on the tongue of Isaiah, who prophesied of the righteous servant, and he said, he will see his offspring and prolong his days, and the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand.
That is like the first signs of blending faith, of trying to throw this singular savior out there. And I think you start to see that twisted faith. Because I think a lot of the Project Bluebeam, when we talk about it, right? Like when they say, if you live in this one region, you're going to see Jesus Christ. If you live in this other region, you're going to see Buddha. At some point, as you get to the final stage in Volume 4, all those people are going to start to merge into one. Like Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad are all going to start to be the same person, telling you, well, everybody worshiped the same person all along. It was just your different flavor of it at that time, which I find really interesting. Not that I would ever believe it, but I find it interesting that people would believe that.
I know exactly who you're talking about. He's an interesting character, but yeah, I've seen the videos where he claims to be the Pope. He claims to be the Messiah. He claims to be a direct descendant of Muhammad. He's claiming to be that all-in-one world religious leader that fulfills all prophecy. This Project Bluebeam is what this engineered fake savior is claiming to be.
He's an interesting one because I think he's either Turkey or Egypt, where he's like has a following, but he's an American, which is interesting.
He kind of looks like a white dude if you look close enough. He's always wearing some sort of beanie or something.
Yeah, that, and he lived here for 25 years. He was making movies and stuff out in Las Vegas, and he's been ingrained in our culture for a really long time.
Interesting. Yeah. Another, before we get into Manasseh's transcript, did you know that there was a claim of another journalist that worked on the Project Bluebeam book with him also died? But you dig around, you can't find the guy's name. It's all word of mouth. I don't know if this was interjected into the conspiracy theory after he died, but there is a claim that another journalist died of a heart attack not too long after Manasseh died of a heart attack somewhere in Ireland. But you dig through the records, publications at that time, like there's no obituaries or newspaper clippings or any sort of articles supporting that fact. I just thought that was an interesting caveat to the story about another journalist also dying of the same circumstances that Manasseh did.
What this journalist, was he kind of reporting on Surge or part of the same projects as they were working in the past at NASA connected together?
So that's where this whole thing kind of falls apart. And I know your detective background, you're asking these good questions because there's not real good answers. They're just kind of spotty sources claiming that this other journalist, Canadian, was helping him on the project, but he wasn't listed as a contributor. They claim he died of a heart attack within a week or so of Manasseh's death. It just seems a little bit too much if you don't have names. Even his family, no names for the kids, no names for the wife. Now you have this other journalist who they claim helped him, but this guy is just like another ghost in the wind.
Do you think it was being redacted, right? Like the government or somebody else trying to hide the facts or realities of the situation? Or do you think that most people don't know because there's not a lot of reality in the situation?
I don't know. I almost feel like in this circumstance, you can kind of zero in pretty quick. So he's a Canadian journalist, died of a heart attack apparently in Ireland. I feel like if this person existed, you could pinpoint that pretty quickly, even if he had no publications or anything tying him with this book. I think you or I, if we had the access and time, could cross-reference people who died in 1996, meeting those criteria and figure out who it is, but nobody can seem to come up with that name. So I almost think it's just interjected into the story to make it seem more grandiose than it actually is.
Yeah. It's kind of like what I was saying earlier, right? I think there's portions of this that are reality, and then there's portions that are just made up. It's trying to find the truth through the entire series of events. And that's what we'll be doing as we talk through many of these subjects. What is fact from fiction as we go through it? If I was the government, which I've worked for the government before, what would be my reasoning for knocking a guy off? Not that I ever did that from the government. Not saying they do that. But if I was, why would I do that? did he know too much about the technology advancements that we were having during that time? This guy was having delusions about the technology that we had, and they were kind of afraid he was going to spill the beans about the drones and about the bone connective technology and about all these things that were currently being developed during that time that were still classified. What's really fascinating is a lot of people can come up with things, but as time goes on, this technology gets released, it starts to become more mainstream. Fiction can sometimes turn into fact, right? Because we can start to see how that path develops and how we get there. Some of it's based upon our fears. As Christian men, we worry about the end of times. It's our hope that Jesus returns. We worry about all the bad things that are also associated with that as we think about our children and our loved ones. But I don't know. It just makes me wonder. I think there's always that grain of truth, no matter what we're talking about. It's kind of like when you see the media, right? Like, half of it's lies and half of it's reality. Kind of you meet in that middle to understand what it is. From a Project Bluebeam standpoint, right? Is that something that you believe in?
Me personally, I kind of want to piggyback off some things you just said there. So we'll circle back and maybe we conclude with what I think it really is. An interesting thing to kind of refute some of his conclusions is that there was a Star Trek unproduced 1975 screenplay called The God Thing, and it essentially lays out this premise, this theory that Monast had. And there was a Star Trek The Next Generation episode called The Devil's Due, which featured similar descriptions that kind of lined up with what Monast was saying. So there is some speculation that somehow he came up with this theory based off of some of these episodes, and maybe he got his hands on this screenplay, or maybe someone gave it to him and he devised his own set of conclusions and theories based off of those two episodes, which is crazy.
So how does that align?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think I always find it interesting when people go back to the guy that really influenced him, Carr. He was a Navy guy, he fought in World War I, World War II, was, you know, published books about naval warfare, exercises, tactics, theories. He was highly respected. And he took a hard right into this conspiracy realm. A lot of his theories were used to promote anti-Semitism around the world. I just find that super interesting that Monast was inspired by somebody like that, somebody who's a journalist, an essayist, so had a career that was pretty mainstream and then took a hard right turn. Sometimes I wonder if he wasn't being manipulated by the government. I'm also under the assumption that the government likes to leak some of the plans to see how people are going to react. So I wonder if he kind of came up with with all these outside influences, being an investigative journalist, trying to break a big story, your ego gets caught up into it, and you come up with a theory that you claim you got from NASA, but never produced the documents. That's where I start to trip up. If you can't produce the source, it starts to be a product of your imagination.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's kind of defining that fact from fiction, right? What is reality? I like to think that all of us think we're the superhero of our own movie. It's like that main character syndrome that folks go through. It's kind of how lies work, right? Like, lies aren't always big. Sometimes it's like, this is reality, but I'm going to start to stretch it, make it sound more impressive. So how can I start to interject some of those themes to make my topic more convincing, that influence you to believe what I am saying? I think he was probably on to something. He had exposure to government technology that folks were working on, and he probably had real fears of what that technology could do. As time went on, we're starting to see that, right? About 20 years later, we're starting to see that technology be introduced into the mainstream. We're starting to see that technology on battlefields. I wonder how much he knew. The truth is always going to be stretched a little bit. I think maybe Serge stretched a little bit of that truth, but there was some reality mixed in.
I also wondered, like, in his earlier career when he was doing God knows what, I assume he didn't get a ton of notoriety for his work. You publish something and next thing you know, you're noticed and you kind of revel in that notoriety. He didn't really live too long after, so I'm not sure he could really add much more to it between the 2 years of publication and his death. He was being interviewed by Canadian TV, and we'll briefly talk about that transcript. Did he finally find his niche? Did he finally feel like he's about to get famous because of it? I struggle because he chose to take his kids out of public schools, lost his kids because of it. Went to jail because of it. That's a big price to pay to put a work of fiction out there.
It is, but there is also conflicting theories, right? As a Christian guy, it's really hard to send your kids to public school. because we know what they're going to be teaching them. They're going to be teaching them very liberal things. They're going to be teaching them about evolution. And that's not stuff I want my kids to learn about, like especially during their impressionable years. So I could see how that could come about just because he was a man of faith. But sometimes I question, and this is a question for you, do you know that all of his theories and how the conspiracy theory was born, did it really come out after his book or before?
So that's interesting because I was going to talk about this guy named Sean T. Rust. In 2024, he published a book called Project Bluebeam Exposed. So I dug around and he doesn't have any social media. He's self-published and the only way to get a hold of him would be through Amazon, through leaving a review or Goodreads. There's really not a whole lot known about this fella. So he essentially takes Monastis theories and interjects updated technology, like the world of technology today versus the mid-90s. I thought that was interesting. And, you know, he doesn't have a whole lot of publications. I'll just read them off here because they're kind of, I assume he's from South America. I could be completely wrong because one of his publications was The Roots of El Salvador. And it's just a historical narrative of El Salvador. He published another in December of 23 called El Salvador's Buried Truth. It's a deep dive into the 1981, I can't even say the name of the tribe, massacre. So he explored that. October 24, he published Storm Makers, which is a geoengineering weather conspiracy book. His most recent work is in January of 2025 called Project Stargate. Essentially, the focus is psychic espionage and Cold War mind control. He popped up out of the blue in the past 10 months, and he's published 5 books. One of the kind of critiques of his work is that it appears that it could be AI generated based off of how it's scripted, how it's worded. But it's just interesting because I know back in 2024 with all the New Jersey drone sightings, I don't know if it's somebody who just hopped on the bandwagon, wanted to make an extra buck, decided to throw something in ChatGPT using Monastis' framework, updating the technology. But he's published, 5 books in the past 10 months, which is kind of out of nowhere. So I don't know if this person, Sean T. Rust, actually exists or it's a pseudonym. Hell, for all we know, it could just be AI spitting shit out and throwing it on Amazon to sell.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting too, right? Because it's like when he came out with his theories, did he start to make them a little crazier just to sell books? As a published author, I don't sell a ton of books, but I've sold a few in my life. It's like modern day branding. Like, what can I put it on Facebook? Can I put it on Instagram so people see it and want to buy it? But he didn't have all those luxuries back in the early 90s besides, MySpace. And a lot of people weren't using it at that time. So it's like, did he kind of blow himself up, blow up his theories in order to gain a following and to sell books and to gain that audience is sometimes what I
think that's a pitfall. When you find your niche, you try to squeeze all the juice out of it. Maybe he did. Back in the 90s, you probably wanted to get on talk shows, radio shows, get bigger book publishing deals. The world of conspiracy theories is very lucrative. And sometimes I feel like the more outrageous the claim, the more money you potentially could inherit. The more fame, the more, like I said, notoriety. So it's a slippery slope if you're not fully rooted in what you're doing.
It's interesting. All right. So you were talking about these French manuscripts, right, that you recovered from Serge. What was that about?
Yeah. So he had an interview on some Canadian television show, but obviously the interview was in French and he has a pretty lengthy transcription of what he was saying. And I'm not going to go over the points that we've already talked about. Obviously the 4 phases, undermining religions, sky projections, telepathic communications, and stage crises. Essentially what he's saying, like, these are the objectives of the new world order. And the goal is to abolish traditional religions and to establish a one-world Luciferian religion based off the call to man. Also, he mentions that it's to eliminate national sovereignty and Christian beliefs and to create a global one-world government. And obviously, using the advanced technology to deceive populations into accepting the new world order. So the interesting part in this interview is about the persecution of the non-compliant individuals. This is where it gets kind of crazy and scary. So, to those who reject this new order, especially Christians, in his viewpoint, the main group that gets persecuted the most are the Christians. Essentially, they will be sent to concentration camps or re-education camps. there's going to be a rainbow colored classification system that will categorize the prisoners. So essentially, there's a rainbow colored classification that categorizes prisoners. So specifically for Christian children, he alleges that they'll be used for human sacrifice in black mass ceremonies or as sex slaves. Classification two are prisoners for medical experiments to test drugs and technologies on. Classification three, healthy prisoners for organ harvesting at an international human organ center. And classification four are healthy individuals who will be used for slave labor in underground facilities. So all that's pretty freaking wild and terrifying, if any of this is even slightly true. But yeah, so those are some of the scary takeaways from some of his claims. He references unspecified, extremely low-frequency communication and mind control technologies, citing some Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Military Review article. I didn't check that out. Just kind of taking his word for it as it being a correct source, whether or not he's twisting it to fit his narrative or if it's technology that actually does what he claims it does is open for interpretation. He suggests satellites could feed artificial thoughts into the genetic structure, enabling global mind control. I mean, this kind of brings me back to the vaccine conspiracy theory claims, where if you get injected with an mRNA vaccine or you have stuff floating around your blood that can resonate with certain frequencies. So that's a weird drawback that my mind's kind of drawn the connection to. He claims that the project was initially planned for release in 1983, linking it to George Orwell's book 1984. Obviously, it never happened in 1983. Claims that it was supposed to happen two or three other dates. Again, it never happened. Obviously, some of the dates that he was claiming were after his death, so he could never explain why that didn't happen. He references New Age figures like Benjamin Krem, David Spangler, Alice Bailey, Helena Blavatsky, claiming they promote global Luciferian initiation through a new Christian church and Masonic organizations. So these are just some of the claims he made during this interview. He frames the New World Order as a satanic project incompatible with Christian beliefs, and warns of a global dictatorship hidden behind democratic appearances. Freudian slip there. During this interview, he did allege some harassment by authorities, though he didn't really give any sort of accounts or explanations. It was very vague, glossed over. But yeah, so that was kind of the summary of his transcript. So the four stages, the scary part are the four classifications of people who do not submit to the system. So I thought that was kind of interesting to read something direct from his mouth, though I couldn't understand it. So you can find the link to that transcript in the description below if you're interested to read it yourself.
That's super interesting. Did you actually listen to him talk? Obviously, you can't understand his words because he's speaking in French, but did you actually listen to him talk? And the reason why I'm asking this question, right, is like, it may be grainy or it may be hard to hear. Did he, you know, like when you hear Hitler talk, right? Like, you're like, Hitler's a madman. Like when you're hearing him talk, did he sound like a rational person as you heard his words?
My opinion is that he didn't look healthy. He looked, in my opinion, disheveled, but we're going back to the stylistic preferences of people back in the 90s. And I can't remember what those were like. He sounded tired, maybe. Just my kind of initial general impressions.
Sure. I just always find it interesting because sometimes as you listen to people talk or you look at them, you can start to see like mental health kind of creep into the picture because there's just something about it that feels off. Do you know, like after these interviews, did anybody like comment about him? Like, this dude seemed wild or this dude seemed a little bit off his rocker, or do you know how that was kind of reported? And I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know if you said, but like, who was this interview? It was Serge, obviously, but who was he talking to at this time? Was it a news reporter?
Yeah, man, I could dig in and look again. I don't exactly have the source of my notes. Again, it's on YouTube and it's been transcribed. So, but you know, the crazy thing about Serge, which we've talked about a lot, and I almost feel like we're kind of beating a dead horse, there is not a lot about him. There's not a lot of people talking about him other than conspiracy theorists who are, this is all secondhand hearsay from a lot of these people. But there's not a lot of direct sources connecting back.
It's so interesting to me, right? Because that's what almost makes me question it. Like, I feel like he knew a little bit, but not a whole lot, is because we would think that for like Abraham Lincoln, right? Like somebody that was like such a historical figure, but we're talking about the 90s. Like me and you were both alive during this time. So it's always so fascinating to me that like much information is obscured.
Dude, let's get crazy though. Like, think about it, right? Don't know who his wife is. Don't know who his kids are. One interview televised I could find, one transcript. He does have a bunch of publications to his credit. But what if he was just put out there to tell this story and they faked his death? I mean, we know that happens.
Yeah, 100%.
What if he was purposely put out there to tell this story and then they took him off the board and he just lives a different life doing something completely different? He just kind of disappears from the scene. You faked death. I mean, a heart attack. I mean, obviously you went to jail. You go home 2 days later, you're dead. It doesn't take a whole lot of people to come in and say, hey, Serge, get out of here. Go live this life somewhere else. Go write something else. Just change your identity. It's just weird how usually there are people it wasn't like this happened in 1942 where everyone's dead or everyone who's still alive is, you know, pushing late life. But you can't seem to find anyone that, hey, I knew Serge and yeah, he was paranoid or the guy was a wacko or the guy knew exactly. There's no evidence of it.
Yeah, it's almost like he went into witness protection and just kind of vanished. I don't know. I find this so interesting though, right? Like, so if we're talking about story manipulation, like why would they say if the government just wanted him to tell this story, like why?
You know, I've always tried to pay that a little bit of attention. When I see some of these theories, like, are they like telegraphing their punch to see how it's going to be received? Or they feel like due to their whatever code they live by, they have to tell you. So you internally accept it. Then you write it off as fiction. And then when it happens, you're like, oh, what the heck?
So interesting, because I know a lot of criminals and they're never going to actually tell you, like, I'm going to rob your house on Monday. So right. I find that. You know what I mean? I find it so interesting, but it almost seems like theological at that point, right? Like they're almost prophesizing, you know, Jesus did, or the figures in the Bible did, like, this is going to happen. This is going to be your Lord and Savior. So I almost wonder if it ties back into that biblical narrative where like, they're telling something, write it down. It's going to happen. I mean, this is probably the devil's playbook, right? But I almost wonder if it kind of follows that form and fashion versus thieves or robbers or what have you.
Yeah. Sometimes is it predictive programming to get you preconditioned to accept it if it does happen? Like, oh yeah, I heard about this. Okay, now I know what's going on. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but
I mean, it does, but it doesn't.
Well, you know, the other interesting thing too is that you look through social media sites, especially with this uptick in the New Jersey drones, all that, those weird sightings, every post you see, someone's commenting, Project Bluebeam, Project Bluebeam. So it's out there in the ether, man. A lot of people have it on the radar. A lot of people kind of know what it is. I personally think that the theory has evolved from this projection into the sky of the Antichrist, and it's more shifted toward this fake alien invasion. They stage a fake alien invasion. We fight against it. We look like we win. We all come together as one world. And then the ball starts rolling for a one world government because we all need to come together in case they come back, and then then somehow the Antichrist would find its way in that mix.
Yeah, you know, we think about that from a Christian perspective. It's, man, how do you get to a one world government, right? Like there's so much division, whether between us and Russia and China and the Middle East, like there's so much division. And what brings people together to be ruled by one, I think is a really interesting topic. Obviously one we can't dive into today, but I think it's what could be so convincing. And perhaps it's aliens. Perhaps it's, you know, in part Project Bluebeam, right? Like how can they convince folks? But it's super interesting to think about.
Did you ever hear of that Ronald Reagan speech back in the, had to have been in the 80s, where it was during the Cold War, but he was essentially suggesting that the world would come together if an alien force, he probably didn't use those words exactly, but essentially stating that the world would come together if there was an outside alien force that can't come invade the world.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You know, I always wonder, because a lot of people think, oh, it's the UN or some type of governing body. Like, do you view it as one president for the whole world, or do you view it as like a unified body?
Oh, man, I think it would have to happen in stages, right? And there's lots of documentation about like the North American Union, South American Union, European Union, the Asian Union. So I wonder if it doesn't start like that, where certain large segments of countries come together. I mean, you look at Europe, man, like Western Europe, you've been there, you spend a lot of time in Western Europe. Western Europe has however many countries, and it's probably half the size of the US. I mean, they could easily become the United Countries of Europe or the United Nations and have the same political system we have and elect one president. I think Asia could do the same, you know, the Middle East. And I wonder if sometimes it's not going to be like a bunch of diplomats coming together, but there is one figure at the top who decides everything. But you don't know who it is, or if it's a man, woman, if it's the Antichrist. But there's one person really making all the decisions, and all these other people. And I think it happens in the world today. They take their orders from these people, and you see it in the media. We talked about this the other day at your house. You can look at news stories, and it's verbatim freaking same. Verbatim. They're all reading the script. And I wonder if it's not like that at the top. Like, hey, this is a script, guys. Hey, president of this country, that country, whatever. This is our agenda. Let's implement it. You figure out how to do it in your country.
It's almost, you know, it's really interesting to think about, right? Because a lot of people will say the UN will mostly just listen to the United States, whoever the president is at that time, which I thought was really creepy when they had the UN summit this week. And did you see the video where the guy calls him daddy?
Oh, yeah, that's so weird, dude.
So, like, I almost wonder, like, because, like, obviously, U.S. is kind of in charge of that, right? Like, they're paying into the budget the most, and they're doing the thing. So, if it's, like, a span of control. But we have seen the powerful figures kind of merge together. U.K. is a great example of that, right? Like, you had the Celts, you had the Nords, you had all these, you know, the Vikings and different things that were competing for land, and eventually it united under the United Kingdom. So, we've seen that at a very small scale. We've seen Russia now, right, with attacking Ukraine and trying to like put back together the Soviet Union. We've always seen it at that large of scale, but from like a world domination perspective, it's always failed. The Mongolians, which under Genghis Khan tried to conquer the world, and the Roman Empire in different places. And I almost wonder if the world is just too diverse to like stand under one decentralized leader, because if, you know, you live in the United States and Trump's your president, like if he's on the other side of the world, like are you really going to listen to him? So I almost wonder if it's like a union. That's kind of how I view it, right? Like a union, they're all going to listen to like that, the most powerful person, and kind of make those decisions in unison. But I don't know.
I think it's different. Like the more advanced technology gets, the more control you have over the currency, the more control you have over supply chains. You can wield a lot of power on countries 3, 4, 5,000 miles away. Like, I'm just going to nuke you if you don't do this, or I'm going to cut off your ports. So I'm just going to just make your currency worthless. Good luck dealing with the starving population. Wait for them to riot and put in a leader who's going to follow us. There's a lot of stuff we could do today that the Romans couldn't do. The Mongols couldn't do. The Mongols could never cross the sea and take over North America. It's just they were not technologically advanced enough. Like now we can fly bombers from Missouri and bomb Tehran in the same day.
Exactly. Like 20 hours we're dropping. I think it was like one of the biggest bombs ever deployed in the history of the world. Obviously not as big as the nukes, but, you know, huge bombs in 20 hours. And another 5 years, what's that going to look like? Technology is changing every single day.
I think when you control the weapons, the currency, the technology, and the food, I mean, I think somebody wanted to do it in certain countries, you could rule the whole world.
Oh, 100%. Right. It's like it's rolling through influence. Scary stuff to think about, because I think we're so close. Right.
Yeah, I agree, too. And it's scary. There's still some stuff bit prophetically that has to happen before that ball really starts sliding down the hill. But we're closer than we've been.
I don't know. I was watching a video of the rebuilding of the third temple in Israel just today. So it has to happen. They have like plans, they're building them, they're showing like elevators, like go up on top of the temple.
I'm shocked to hear that, because I think there's a mosque on top of it.
There is, but they're building like these they're building these like prefabricated structures, right? I don't know. I didn't get a chance to like finish it all, but like there's plans. Like this lady was like, I'm in Jerusalem. Like she was showing billboards of the rebuilding of the third temple that were up. So I feel like it's right around the corner, man. And if we see all these bombs dropping in Israel right now between Iran and Israel and Hamas, even if you were Israel, I'm not saying they would do this, but if you really wanted a different temple there, how easy is it just to say a bomb got dropped, you know?
You know,
the territory.
There are some guys down in Texas that were genetically engineering a perfect red heifer for sacrifice for the Third Temple. And I think they shipped like three of them over there like late last year or early this year. Nobody, the story kind of died because of that October 7th attack.
Yeah.
I haven't really heard much else about it, but they think there's a theory that they've already slaughtered the red heifers and they have the ashes waiting for the temple.
I saw it the other day. I didn't see the slaughter, but I saw a video on it where I think it's like every year, like they like genetically modify these things or whatever, and they have the red heifers every single year.
Yeah, I think so. My limited knowledge, they have to be treated a certain way. Like they can't labor, or they can't, you know, do certain things. But they have to be a certain age, and if they have a blemish or something with like white hairs in their fur, like usually they can age out of it. So over the past like couple thousand years, they haven't had one yet. But until recently, I think they had three.
Yeah, I just did a quick Google search, and it's like there's like 50 videos of in 2025 of the red heifer. Right?
We might have to do a podcast on that, dude.
Yeah, super interesting. But, all right, yeah, let's wrap up. The one takeaway that you want to leave with our audience today, right? Like, is this a valid point? Is this something that we should be concerned about, or is this fiction?
I think it's a mix of both. If you have understanding of Revelation and you understand that there's going to be an Antichrist, there's going to be the beast system, there's going to be a one world currency, you're going to need a chip, maybe you sit down and think about how could that happen given today's technology? And I'm sure you could probably piece together a pretty cool movie plot. That's my opinion. When you do these deep internal dives of trying to figure out the way the world works, what the future may hold, you can take modern technology, and if you're creative enough, piece together a pretty convincing narrative, just like the movies we watch. Some of the stuff we watch is so crazy, but when you're in it, when you're watching it, it's super convincing until you step out of that box.
The world is a scary place. I think every day, unfortunately, is getting worse. Like, whether truth, a hoax, or perhaps a prophecy, right? I think the ideal that the next world-changing event could be completely manufactured remains chilling and as relevant as ever. So stay awake, stay discerning, because deception won't look like a monster. You can't believe what you see, and you have to have discernment. And it perhaps may look like a miracle. You have to make sure that it aligns with your worldview. So I thank folks for tuning in today. It's been an incredible opportunity to connect with you. We have a whole hell of a lot more coming. It's a crazy world. Anything you want to close out with?
Yeah, man. I think just, you know, stay rooted in scripture. It's going to be hard to be deceived if you understand the Bible. Jesus loves you.
And we love you. Stay close to Christ. Till next time.
We've hit the 0 hour. That's a wrap on this week's transmission. New episodes drop weekly, so stay tuned and don't miss the next signal. Follow, subscribe, and spread the word. You've been listening to Zero Signal. We're out.